Welcome to Financial Repression Authority's Roundtable Insight, where the best fund managers, economists, and industry leaders discuss the key investment issues and challenges in the current macroeconomic environment.
Hi, welcome to FRA's Roundtable Insight. This is Richard Benulli. Today we have a special guest, Dan Ammerman. He is a chartered financial analyst, author, and speaker with degrees in finance and over 30 years of professional experience. As an investment banking vice president in the 1980s, he did groundbreaking work in the security originations and asset liability management areas. And he is the creator of a number of DVDs and books on finance. Welcome, Dan.
Thank you, Richard.
So today we have a very interesting topic. Dan has done a lot of research in terms of the interplay between the U.S. national debt, Social Security, Medicare entitlement programs, and how that all ties to the future of interest rates. Can you give us a high-level view initially? We have also a number of charts that Dan has provided. If you look at the posting, you'll see the charts as well to be able to follow on the discussion. Dan?
Sure. Well, I've been working with analyzing, understanding, teaching people about financial repression in the way most people talk about it for many years now. And when we look to what's going on there, probably the easiest way to do it is to look back at the classic financial repression period of roughly 1945 to about 1970. Somewhere in that range, when basically all the developed economies of the West were engaged in financial repression, which has several different meanings. One of them in this case is just basically forcing negative real interest rates, meaning the rate of inflation is higher than the interest rate on government debt, on savings as a whole, which is how they escaped from very high governmental debt levels relative to the economy the last time we're in this situation. But many things today are quite different from that time. And this is true in the United States. This is even more true in Europe. And the difference is that when financial repression was occurring the first time, and then as we were leaving financial repression and then going into more boom times and so forth in the 1980s, what was happening was that the baby boom, the boomers, were being born, they were growing up, they were entering the workforce. And all of a sudden we had a tremendously greater number of workers out there who are out producing real goods and services, and that gave the economy a real boost. And that really helped get the government debts under control the last time. The difference this time that is just fundamental, night and day different, is that the boomers are retiring. And the expenses of paying for them are about to get far more expensive. And if you look at the graph with the orange bars that says coming surge in benefit costs, you can, and this is from the Congressional Budget Office, I derived it from their projections, you can see that we have a tremendous increase in projected benefit payouts that's coming up. So if we look at what the Congressional Budget Office is projecting, fiscal year 2017, we'll see an increase over 2016 of about $83 billion. That's up over $300 billion by 2019. It's over $600 billion by 2021. And by the time we're to 2024, it's an additional $1 trillion a year. So you take the entire U.S. government expenditures right now and just paying out anticipated Social Security and Medicare, so many more boomers are going to be collecting in the first place, plus aging boomers have higher medical costs, which further pushes up Medicare, that we're expecting to be adding another $1 trillion per year by 2024. And if you go out to 2028, we're up to almost $2 trillion. By 2031, we're up over $2.6 trillion above where we are today. So we have this just tremendous increase in costs that's coming straight at us at the same time that we're starting with a $20 trillion national debt. And something to place this into perspective is there's been a lot of discussion, we'll see whether it gets through Congress or not, but about this potential trillion-dollar infrastructure stimulus. And if you look at the two graphically side by side, you take $1 trillion, you spend it over 10 years, which is what they're talking about. That's $100 billion a year. And you compare that to the increase in expected Social Security and Medicare payments over the coming years. Yeah. And the $1 trillion stimulus is almost inconsequential.
And would these numbers change significantly or roughly about the same if U.S. Social Security system were to change some rules, you know, like sort of retiring later or maybe less benefits, or, you know, how would that change the numbers?
Well, they've already been doing that, of course, and there's always the possibility they will do that more in the future. There are a number of different ways that Social Security and Medicare costs can be effectively reduced by kind of nicking it in small little ways that hopefully they can quickly get away with, that reduce overall payments for everybody by a substantial amount over the years to come. So there are ways of holding it down. And what the inflation rate that they report and tie it to is another way of doing it. Here in the United States, Social Security payments are not tied to the CPIU, the Consumer Price Index. They're tied to a different index that tracks wages that increases at a slower rate than overall consumer prices. There's just a number of different things they can do to hold down the growth in those costs. But based upon the best information the Congressional Budget Office had, they're still showing those deficits being up over, or the costs increasing by over $1 trillion a year within the next 6 to 7 years.
So the basic message here is that it's not going to be enough this time to do financial repression of just negative interest rates or you know, low nominal rates or inflation adjusted interest rates, right? We're going to need more. It's a combination of other pillars of financial repression that we call them. We have four pillars, and so you see those additional pillars coming into play.
Yes, but the key point that I'm making, and we'll go to some of the numbers here, and I think it'll become very clear, is that we can't really look at financial repression in the post-World War II example, because the fundamentals are very different. At that time, if you look at what really happened over time, it's not so much that the debt got driven down, but they used financial repression to hold the debt level in inflation-adjusted term.
Yeah.
All over a 25-year period, there's a tremendous amount of economic growth. So we went from the national debt exceeding the total size of the economy to being under 30% of the size of the economy, and that's how it was done. But they weren't facing this tremendous financial challenge that we have with benefit costs. And because of that, the way this is solved, the way this is worked out, what the impact is on investors, and most particularly what the impact is for anyone who is expecting Social Security or Medicare benefits, means things have to work differently this time around. And the thing is that for many years, of course, people have been aware this was coming, but it always seemed to be out in the distant future. Do you have to worry about this? Well, it's here right now.
Wow.
We know for a fact that in the coming years, we're going to have this force here that's just getting ever more powerful every year that we're just not used to dealing with. So we have twin unprecedented situations. One of them is a $20 trillion U.S. national debt. Another one is that we have much higher Social Security and Medicare costs on the way quickly, and those two are happening at the same time. So to kind of show how that works together, if you go to Exhibit AB3, this is from my released in February of 2017, a three-volume research report on this that has over 800 different exhibits in it, and I've got a few of them excerpted here. And this one just takes a look at U.S. government nominal cash flows going out 10 years. And what I've done here is I've taken our current $20 trillion debt. I've assumed a return to historically average interest rates, about 5% higher than we are right now. But I've totally knocked out Social Security and Medicare. I've taken the benefits back to where they were as a percent of the economy in 2009 and saying no surge, as if the boomers didn't exist. Okay?
Yeah.
So when you look at these, the key column is you look at net interest. And net interest is exploding upwards.
Now, it doesn't happen instantly because the weighted average life of the debt outstanding of the United States government is 5.8 years.
Yes.
So it takes a number of years, even if interest rates were to shoot straight up, for that to actually be fully reflected in the interest payments going out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yep.
But what would happen is that we'd still have this surge in the deficit that's going up almost dollar for dollar with the net interest payments.
Wow.
And you can see this if you look at Exhibit AB18.
Okay.
Yeah. The blue line is anticipated taxes coming in.
Yeah.
And the green line is general governmental expenditures. The red line is benefits. And again, we've kind of knocked out what's happening with the boomers here to kind of look at interest in isolation. And you've got the purple line that's kind of overlaid in this particular graph by the yellow line. The purple line is interest rates just shooting upwards, and that brings the deficit straight up along with it. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the overall impact on the economy and total governmental debt, you know, what economists usually do is they compare the size of the government debt to the economy, which is basically just affordability. And you can see that the debt crosses the size of the economy in terms of even the public debt by about the mid-2030s, and that kind of accelerates a little bit away from there. And in digging through all these many hundreds of schedules in terms of nominal terms and inflation adjusted in 10 years out, 30 years out, there's a lot of numbers there. And I ended up coming up with Exhibit AB15, which is a really useful way of tracking this.
Okay.
And what this is this is a measure of inflection points when it comes to levels that are problematic for nations, where they can get themselves in a great deal of trouble. And start off with, I took a definition of what is insanity. Well, insanity is if benefits and interest payments consume all government taxes and every other dollar of government spending, including defense, including other transfer, including running all the agencies, including keeping the lights on at the White House, all have to be borrowed.
Right. Wow.
You reach that point, you're totally gone. And we'll see those in some later graphs. In this one here, we don't quite reach insanity. We're more than halfway there.
I see.
By the mid-2020s. Okay, we've hit that yellow zone there, which is dangerous. And that's what I call an inflection point range, because it could shift at any time in a very dangerous range. Now, separately from that, we have this issue with the benefits. So that leads to the AC exhibits. And these are got 25 different scenarios in a group of different modules within the research report. And what I do with the AC series is that I negate the national debt. If you look at the top of the Exhibit AC3, I drop the debt down to about $9 trillion, a little less than half the size of the economy, as it has been for most of the time since the 1960s. And I had interest rates just go up 2%, so low, but still below long-term average, but I had benefits being paid in full. Now, if you look at the net interest column that used to be the troublemaker,
yes,
it's been negated, all right? But now we've got a real problem in the net benefits column.
Wow.
We're from $2 trillion a year in 2017 to $3.8 trillion a year by 2026. And what's happening? That deficit is shooting up out of control again. And this is shown in Exhibit AC18. Now, when we look at that purple line, which is net interest payments –
yes.
That's no longer the source of the problems. We've got bigger problems than that. We have the red line, and this is based on U.S. government expectations, which is the benefits. And you can see how the red line is pulling that yellow line up step for step until it reaches the point by the time you're about 2039, 2040, where the annual deficit exceeds all normal governmental spending.
Wow.
Meaning the point of insanity has been reached. If we look at Exhibit AC15, we've crossed into the red at that point. And you can also see, if you look at Exhibit AC21, you see a much faster pulling away, particularly as we get further out in time, of the government debt levels from the size of the economy. Okay, so we have two entirely independent, compelling, major financial problems that we know are out there. There's that $20 trillion debt, which is being held in check right now by having some of the lowest interest rates in history. Even after any recent Federal Reserve movements, they're still extremely low by long-term historic averages. We also have, it hasn't really hit yet, but it's about to, this tremendous increase in Social Security and Medicare payments going out. But the problem is, in reality, we have both of these hitting us at the same time.
Yes.
And that takes us to exhibit AD3, okay? And AD3,
yep.
If you look at our net benefits,
yes,
they're going from $2 trillion up to $3.8 trillion exactly as expected. And if you look at the net interest, we got a $20 trillion debt, and I'm showing what would happen if we just returned to historically average interest rates. If you look at the 10-year Treasury yield between, again, 1962 and 2007, it was about 5% higher than it was at the last quarter of last year. And it takes time for that to be reflected, but nonetheless, we still go from net interest payments. This is, you know, publicly outstanding debt only. It doesn't include interest payments to the trust funds. And that increases from a little shy of $400 billion to almost $2 trillion at the same time that we have net benefits almost doubling. And when those two hit together, it's almost like we have two exponential series hitting each other simultaneously and reinforcing. And what happens when you have two series instead of one? Well, things get much worse much more quickly. And that takes us to exhibit AD18. And look what's going on here. We have that red line, which is benefits, pulling up like we saw before. Now we have another exponential series that's been set off, which is interest payments. The purple line is shooting upwards. And then when you look at that yellow line, it's doing truly insane things. If you go to exhibit AD15 for a second, you can see now most of the graph, we have the red there. We're into the insanity range in less than 10 years.
Wow.
The inflection point range, and we take these both into account. And you come back again to exhibit AD18, and it's just amazing what's going on there. And again, it's the two series feeding into each other. And I have a graphic that shows the intertwined relationship between these factors. The future national debt, the future Security and Medicare, and future interest rates are all completely, totally intertwined.
Yeah, exactly. And just a question on to what extent are these based on inflation rate parameters? Is there like a parameter you have for inflation rate for assumptions?
Well, I do truly intensive financial modeling. Yeah, that's kind of the core of the research report. What I based this upon is I had reverse engineered, which was interesting, the Congressional Budget Office long-term outlook.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of I could do what they can do, and then I'm going to change their assumptions and do some more reality-based things, explore some different factors and so forth.
Okay.
The base scenario that's being explored here is 2% real growth, all right, and 3% inflation rate.
Okay.
So if you look at a long-term inflation rate, it's about 3%. If you look at 2% real growth, that's a tad less than the Congressional Budget Office has been projecting. They've been projecting about 2.1%. The Federal Reserve has been projecting 1.8% in real terms.
Yeah.
So it's kind of right in that range there. So you put those two together also, and that's roughly a nominal economic growth of 5%. Knock 3% of it out as being an illusion, this really inflation, and then you're down to 2% real economic growth. And what that all also produces, if you put that together, is something else that looks just crazy, but it's where the numbers take you, and that's exhibit AD21. And you can see the national debt exploding to over $200 trillion within 30 years.
Wow. What would be the reaction by governments and the government and the central bank, Federal Reserve? Like, will they do a policy that is a combination of different forms of financial oppression, such as forcing inflation rate higher or changing the rules like the regulations or data obfuscation is another pillar we see in terms of how the parameters are defined, like how some of the assumptions that you have. So they, if they make those you know, look better, if you will. I mean, they'll obviously calculate it accurately, but are they being calculated appropriately is the big question.
Yeah, well, when I prepared these exhibits, I'm not saying that this is doom, gloom, and disaster is upon us. That's not the point if you understand financial repression. The point of exhibit AD15, let's take a good look at that. You see that almost immediate yellow, the inflection point range. You're seeing within 10 years we entered the scale. By the time we're in the early 2030s. The point is that is not to say that's going to happen.
Yes.
That would happen if we had normality in the same way that most people are building into it or are building their assumptions when it comes to long-term retirement planning.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? People are expected to get their benefits in full. That's what the government assures them. They're looking for long-term historic average returns often in terms of how they're doing investment allocations, what they're expecting to earn, when they think they'll be able to retire. And the point is, if everyone's expectations were to be met simultaneously and we were to have true normality with average interest rates, we were to pay all benefits in full, then the country is very quickly in the insanity range. But that doesn't need to happen at all. And if you look at Exhibit DA15, this is a core part of the research report, is I show even with that 2% economic growth rate, five different ways to do it with what for the average person would seem like some fairly subtle tweaks. And all the yellow's gone.
Wow.
All the red's gone.
Yeah.
You're staying right in that green zone the entire time. And you can do that with interest rates. You can do that with benefits. You can do that prioritizing interest rates over benefits. You can do it prioritizing benefit changes over interest rates. You can do it with tax changes, and you can do it with inflation. All of these are valid ways of staying within the range.
So all of those, you're saying, will be likely employed to one extent or another, some more, some less, and in order to sort of keep the whole system going and everything in check.
Oh, I think there'll be some of each, probably just because the problems are so great. But a big part of what I explore in the research report, and the interesting part is once you understand this, then you come and look back at what's been happening the last 5-10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Some things are all of a sudden going to make perfect sense and add up. Is that, for instance, if you look at paying for everything with taxes, it's shocking the degree taxes would have to rise to pay for everything. And this would be politically very difficult to do.
Yeah.
And as you know, Richard, part of the appeal to financial repression for a national government is that we know, going back to the post-World War II example, that there's virtually no political cost to this. Yes, people really do pay the personal cost in their lives, but this is not generally understood by the voters. And it doesn't really hurt the governments. So I think some of the methodologies, some of the ways of staying in the green, so to speak, here and staying out of the inflection point range and the insanity range are far more politically palatable than others. And that means we're more likely to see those used. So those are the ones where I believe that individuals really need to have their defenses in place for. Anticipating that this is the most likely path to be taken, what do you do about it? And the other issue is, and this is something that I explore quite a bit in the research report as well, is every single one of these possibilities for kind of staying in the zone, keeping the country from going into the yellow zone, then into the red zone and so forth, they have, as we have seen already in any of the markets since 2010, they have very broad effects on all investment categories. Stock market, bond market, real estate, precious metals, they're all driven by this.
Can you go into some of those from your perspective?
I laugh. It's because I have spent so much time doing this in terms of preparing the research report over the last year, particularly in concentrating on this. Much depends on the specific methods that are being used. It depends on the exact approach the government takes. In some scenarios, actually stocks are a really good place to be. In other scenarios, stocks are the worst possible place that you want to be. Bonds are, in general, as you know, during a time of financial repression, not a good idea at all. There are some time periods in some cases where, in fact, they could be a pretty good investment for a period of time. Quite a bit of money could be made there. real estate is a good investment. Gold, silver, things like that. Very much, again, that depends on the particular scenario that you're looking at and how this is being done.
Mm. And the effect on the other side of the equation for the recipients of Social Security payments, do you see that as being, yes, you will be honored the payment that was promised, but maybe the purchasing power has diminished significantly, you know, so, well, you might get $1,500 per month. There may be not much you can buy with that, you know, compared to 5 years ago, 10 years ago. Do you see that playing out?
That's very much part of it, and there's different ways of doing that, and that's a big part of what I do. Now, in the research report, what I do is for each one of these scenarios, I have 25 different things that I'm examining here. The first 24 exhibits are all the nation as a whole, and then the next 10 exhibits look for individual savers and individual beneficiaries in both nominal and real terms, and shows what the impact is at different points in time, different years out, in terms of standard of living, what you're going to be able to afford and so forth. So there is very much a direct personal cost for savers, and working in a different way but related, a direct personal cost for beneficiaries of, as with any aspect of financial repression, the changes the government does to stay within the constraints. And just for one example, here in the United States, when it comes to Social Security, and this is something I've got on my website and that I've written about at length that most people don't realize, even to the extent that it's supposedly going up with inflation, although it's based on wages rather than the CPI, Social Security is not actually fully inflation indexed, because most people have their Medicare Part B premiums deducted from their Social Security payments.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a provision called hold harmless. And what hold harmless does, and this is it's a complicated subject. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on here. And again, I've got a long analysis of this on my website. But basically, what hold harmless does is it allows the government to strip away all inflation indexing to the extent that Medicare premiums are increasing.
Wow. So it's a combination of different pillars of financial repression, data obfuscation, in other words, changing the way that parameters and data and indices are calculated, that would allow this whole burden of debt to be less, right? The burden of the potential for increase in deficits or debt to be reduced.
Well, it's fascinating. And this is part of what I explore, because I think oftentimes when people look at things like this, they take kind of a high drama approach, like something big and obvious is going to happen that's going to make the newspaper headlines and everyone will know about it and Social Security get canceled or something like that and so forth. But when you really get inside the numbers, and that's where I lived for a few months as a part of this, was living deep inside those numbers, you would be surprised. All it takes is a tweak of a half a percent here in a rate, a tweak of a quarter percent here, and next thing you know, these seemingly huge problems have gone away. But then again, when you follow through to the impact on individual savers and individual beneficiaries, they are in fact being paid in full. You can't get away from that. You know, if you're going to make a $100 trillion problem go away, $100 trillion in pain has to get shifted somewhere. And that does happen. But it doesn't happen in a way where people can reach their finger out and say, okay, this is happening to me right now because this change was made here. That's just not the case.
Wow, that's quite interesting. How can our listeners learn more about your work and obtain access to the report?
My website is DanielAmmerman.com. It's there on some of the slides. And if they go there, I've got a whole lot of resources available, some of which are keyed into financial repression, some of which are keyed into making better benefit decisions, some of which are keyed into looking at alternative investment categories and so forth. And they can find a couple of detail articles that are not the research report itself, but they're like this. They have exhibits that have been pulled out of the research report. And they can also find a link to a detailed description of the research report, which has the information there.
Great. Thank you very much, Dan, for being on the program show.
Well, thank you for having me, Richard.
Yeah. Hope to have you again soon. Thank you, Dan.
The FRA Roundtable Insight Show is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the show each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Any discussions among the panel participants or responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the panel participants and do not take into consideration the listener's suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Please be advised that you invest or speculate at your own risk.